I made the loop, ran across it, leapt for the next over, and scrambled down that fire escape into another alley. I leapt a wall and emerged in the crowd, dodging people as I ran, mostly successfully. I had a piece of good luck when the third hover misjudged a lane of slickboard traffic and a slick courier shot in front of the bristling cruiser. The cruiser's AI yanked it into a barrel roll to avoid the collision. Hegemony cop cars are all fitted with that sort of control to make high-speed chases less dangerous for civvies. The courier would get dinged with a ticket, but she was still on her board instead of spread over the pavement, and I was long gone. Finally, I lost the last of the police cruisers by plunging into the old Bowery section of the tank district and disappearing into the hole. Possible to find almost anything in the tank, though not as much as you can find in the Great Souk or the Freetowns. The tank population doesn't take kindly to police. It's a good place to hide, as both Abracadabra and Onwen Carlyle knew. The Bowery is the very worst part. The cancerous heart of chill-fed urban blight. And when I was human, I hadn't braved it very often. The tank? Yes. The Bowery? No. Not unless I was desperate. Back when I'd been human, I'd had my board tuned by Connie Basilius at the Heaven's Arms. Occasionally, I'd gone into the hole, honing my skill on a board against the skaters, couriers, ska heads, and flick surfers. Jace and I had even done naked blade slickboard duels, back in the first violent flush of our affair. Even Hegemony federal marshals don't go into the hole often. It isn't worth it. The hole itself is underground. It used to be a transport well until the last really huge earthquake. The quake ripped apart the central well and opened up a sinkhole underneath, so the walls were a collage of relays, 85-year-old fiber optic spikes and reactive strips, debris from the buildings overhead crumbling into the sinkhole. The Slick tribe had moved in and made it even more challenging, building ramps and jump-offs, spikes protruding from the walls, dead zones and hover patches that made the air move in unsteady swirls, just aching to rip a skate off a board. The tangled alleys leading up to the hole are narrow and sloping, most of them covered by cobbled-together roofs of flimsy plaswood, plasticine, and other scavenged materials. Every once in a while, a few teams of Hegemony federal marshals will sweep through the hole to pick up criminals. But they never net much. Around the Slick tribes, if you don't adhere to strict codes, you're out. It's all too easy to flip someone off a board and let them fall into the dark well of the hole. The worst that comes out of here is gang warfare and ecstasy for Vance parties, and the authorities are more than willing to let that pass as long as the Slick tribes only kill each other. My shoulder burned as the bullet hole closed. Dusk was falling. I was going to miss my date with Lucas. Then again, all he would have to do is listen to whatever lie the Holovids were telling, and he'd know I'd had some trouble. I stopped and leaned against a sagging plywood shelter that smelled like humans living with chem showers instead of regular bathrooms. A fair number of skas lived in shacks around the hole itself, eking out a living on their parents' credit lines while dealing ecstasy and bitfox on the side, tuning boards and generally living as they always have. That was where I saw the first sign of life. A skate who couldn't have been more than 10 coasted up on a humming, nicely tuned chair void, almost as long as he was. He brought the board to a stop and hopped onto solid ground, nicking the board neatly with a kick as the power cell died down. His hair stood up in gelled, acid green spikes, and his face was streaked with blue camo paint. He glanced around, not seeing me, and pulled a pack of smokes out of his breast pocket. He wore a flannel shirt and a loose pair of black pleather shorts covered in rippling silver mage tape. This was evidently a little used part of the hole, because he proceeded to sit down right at the edge and smoke, looking up as the cloak of night fell across the faraway roof and tiny hole that was the main entrance to the subterranean world. Little drops of light that were anti-grav and power cells began to flock through, weaving in complicated patterns. I made a low noise, scraping against the plaswood shelter. He made no move. I stepped out cautiously. He took one incurious glance over his shoulder, his fingers caressing his board's power cell. I stopped, the sweet scent of synth hash filling my nostrils. He was normal, wouldn't be able to see the disturbance I created in the landscape of power. But I still probably looked like I'd been run through a few hover washes. I swallowed. My sword shoved into the loop on my belt. My hands were loose and raised.
Hi. I'm Dante Valentine.
He let out a chuff of smoke.
Fuck. Wantonweenie.
I kept a firm hold on my temper.
I know how to ride a board. I just don't have one right now. You can help me with that.
He had wide blue eyes, clashing with his acid green hair.
Lander, fuck Niners out of clapping you.
Innocent until proven otherwise.
Some people try to mimic slick tribe lingo. I don't. It's enough that I can guess at 80% of what they mean. Even Connie had been hard to understand at times. It was a long shot, but I decided to go for it.
Connie Bazelius, Heaven's Arms, he's still around?
I thought his eyes couldn't get any rounder.
Bazmouth on your tribe?
I'm not tribe. I'm Lander, remember?
Bing you, Bazmouth.
Thanks.
I folded myself down onto the gritty, filthy floor of the ledge jutting out into the side of the hole.
Bum a smoke?
After that, it was nothing but waiting. Those of the Slick tribe don't function in the same time zone as the rest of us. The less charitable say it's because of all the hash and ecstasy. He smoked his way through two more cigarettes, generously sharing with me. Then stood slowly, brushed his pleather shorts off, and pressed the power cell. He tossed the board and flung himself after it, his new Bufu sneakers landing on the deck's surface. The synth hash didn't soothe me as much as I wished it would. As soon as he was gone, I stubbed the last one out in the filthy, greasy crud masquerading as dirt down here. I put my head down on my knees. The blue glow of my god's attention was comforting, hovering at the edges of my mental awareness. I'd just outrun four cruisers and what looked like mob troops. That wasn't a new trick, cops and mob working together. Sometimes the cops needed a little help from the extra-legal side. Of course, the mob troops had only been legally augmented, but if they were working for the cops, I didn't blame them. Still, it bothered me. I assumed they were mob because they hadn't behaved like cops. Cops would have shouted at me to drop my weapons. If they weren't from the Tanner family's war with me, maybe they were from Lucifer pulling strings behind the scenes again, using me to trap Eve. Hellesfront had all kinds of agents on Earth. It stood to reason the cops might be part of that network.
What a joy. I've got so many enemies, even I can't decide between them.
Slickboards began to build as the hole woke up. Skates and other slick tribers, like scions, generally come out and play at night. I tilted my head up, watching the aerial ballet. It's impossible to look totally graceful while riding a board you're always on the edge of spilling, but confidence imparts its own kind of grace. I watched the little darts of anti-grav light, spinning in the figure-eight pattern slick riders use for high traffic zones, others dipping down and peeling away to take runs around the edges. A Vance party in another part of the hole started to throb. I'd thought before of using the patterns of hover traffic for divination. Now I watched the spots of firefly light that were the slick borders, and I felt premonition flutter under my skin. Deep, unsteady panic welled up from the pit of my belly.
Gabe.
Connie still rode aboard. And he, of all people, reminded me of just how much we'd all aged while I was letting time pass me by in Toscano. His fingernails were still clipped brutally short and painted with black molecule drip. He probably still played in a neo-neo-punk band. Kids like Connie rarely ever grow up. He was still riding, still part of a tribe. That meant he was still fast and mean. He was still lean and rode with hip-shot ease. Still wearing flat golden plas metal rings on his right hand. Still the same dead, flat, dark eyes. His hair was different now, dyed magenta and long braided, studded with ivory beads. He wore, since he was no longer a young punk fashion plate but an aging one, a black V-neck linen shirt, skin-tight purple viscose velvet breeches, and supple black fake shark boots. Fans of wrinkles spread at the corners of his eyes, and his mouth was bracketed with two curving lines. He still rode a Valkyrie. Slick tribers are nothing if not loyal to their decks. Connie had known my old face,
My human face. I'd been taking my slickboards to him for servicing since I'd left the academy. And we'd evolved a useful acquaintanceship over the years. An acquaintanceship I was about to use for all it was worth. I presented my left cheek subtly as he stood now with his back to the ledge, studying me. With luck, he'd recognize my tat. The kid with the green hair settled down cross-legged and lit another cigarette. Connie grinned, showing strong white teeth. Tucked under Connie's arm was a long, slim shape in a chamois sheath.
Deadhead. You get augments?
Kinda. Against my will. Nice to see you too, Connie.
Been a long wave. You bring in trouble. Niners all over the entrances. There've been a few scuffs.
I'm sorry. Look, I'm on the warpath, Connie. I don't want to hurt any slick tribers, but my temper's real short. I want a board, and I need to get out of here unseen and send a couple messages. I can pay.
Yeah? Pay?
Aw, Sekhmet Zayas.
New credits, you ass. Not that band dangle. You think I was born yesterday?
You look awful young.
You have no fucking idea how old I feel.
Not my fault. I lost a game with the devil, Connie.
There's no lie like telling the truth, is there?
Devil?
Business at the arms must be good. He wore a DatBand plug-in that registered him as constantly monitored by a security company, which meant he probably had his fingers in a few extra legal pies. Don't ask. Look, Con, are you gonna help or am I gonna have to figure something else out? I'm kind of in a hurry.
Holy shit. It is you, Valentine.
Don't worry. Nobody else would recognize me either.
Shit, they won't. You still got that look. We all know it. That hungry Valentine look. Who you hunting this time, baby?
He weighed the chamois-sheathed package in both hands. Whoever runs the Tanner family and killed my best friend.
And anyone else who gets in my way.
Name a price, Connie. If I don't have it, I'll get it in an hour. He tossed me the package. I flashed to my feet and caught it, moving too quickly to be human. He didn't flinch. I had to give him credit.
You always paid before. Respect you earned a little cred.
He jerked his head back.
Come on, ride with me. Then we figure out how you get out of here.
And a couple slick couriers? There's no danger in it, not for them.
Shit, this ain't nothing. You should have seen the fight we had last year between the Pacers and the Tank Lickers. Anything a lander comes up with, we can handle.
The package in chamois was a Valkyrie. Sleek and black and beautiful. Freshly tuned and mage clean.
Good old Connie. I wonder how much of my reputation still survives down here in the hole.
I sent 4 messages by slick courier. 3 on paper and 1 on air. The air message was for Abracadabra, telling her I was still alive and still going after Gabe's killers. She'd make sure the information got around and caused maximum confusion. It also had a chance of reaching Lucas, who would be able to pick up my trail in the hole if he was lucky. I'd feel a lot better about this once he managed to catch up with me. The first paper message was to Selene.
Tell Tianz Jaff's been taken and needs help.
That would also let the Hellespont agents know I believed them without committing me to letting them protect me. Maybe, just maybe, they would concentrate on getting Jaff out of Hawk or sowing some confusion to keep my trail clear of demons. I didn't hope for much. After all, they were probably more interested in finding me and spiriting me away from Saint City before another group of demons got their hands on me. Still, I could hope. Next message? To the Tanner family's corporate front downtown.
Hand over Spokarelli and Thornton's killers, or I'll send you to hell.
Nice, sharp, direct. Though I intended to pay them a visit soon after they received it. The very last message was to Jado. To this courier, I gave Eddie's master sheets, sealed in a mage pouch with the homicide file and a note asking him to hide it and apologizing for the inconvenience. That about wiped out my stolen bankroll. Between pressing cash on Connie and paying the courier's hazard fees. I was a hot commodity now. It would have been cheap not to pay them for potentially running across someone who would give them plasflak intended for me. I finally stood at the edge of another ledge, down in the well of the hole, far enough down that I felt the dread touch of claustrophobia. This would probably be a very good place to hide if I wasn't so damn nervous in close dark spaces. The central cavern was huge, of course, but it was still underground, and I could feel the pressure of the dirt overhead and to the sides bearing down on me. Connie stood next to me. I needed food. I needed rest.
Too bad, Sunshine.
Tribe's moving to clear out an exit. Think you can keep up?
I shrugged. I had demon reflexes and had put in a fair amount of time on slickboards, but he was Tribe. He lived on his board when he was running his shop. I knew better than to show any false bravado here, especially as he was doing me a favor. Just go slow and try not to tip me.
Chaw.
He simply smacked the power cell, tossed the board, and leapt on. I pressed the power cell on my own board and dropped it on the ledge, jumping on and stamping my front foot down to propel the board out over the hole. I caught my slick legs quickly and dove after Connie. He circled in a lazy spiral and finally nipped neatly into an archway on the west side. I followed. It was a shock to go above ground, especially on a slick board, bulleting past neon and keeping to street side because the hover lanes would bring me to the attention of the cops sooner.
I hope nobody's figured out I talked to Horman, and I hope he hasn't alerted his superiors to my presence.
It started raining again. Pellets of slushy ice. Saint City felt carnivorous tonight.
So do I.
I had a full load of ammunition, thanks to Connie, plus my plas guns and my sword, as well as my knives. But it wasn't enough for a full-scale assault on a mob family. The Tanner Family Nerve Center was in a rich part of town, an arc of prime bayfront property housing blue blood mansions. This wasn't the corporate front, the legal face of the mob business. This was their home, where they would entertain and hold their most important meetings. A lone scion would be recklessly stupid to attack a nerve center.
I might be stupid, but I'm fast, I'm mean, I have a sword that can cut the devil and the will to use it. Whoever's there will just have to die, that's all. After they answer my questions. All my questions.
I had to approach from uphill, swinging out in a wide arc and staying below the hover lanes likely to hold police traffic. Slickboards can't go over water. And if I'd had a hover, well, a hover wouldn't have changed anything. Across the water, the lights of downtown glittered like a necklace. The orange glow of anti-grav and streetlights staining the rainy sky. My city throbbed and pulsed like a heart, its chambers thudding with power, a pulse echoed by the gauntlet clasped to my left wrist.
There are demons in the city tonight. Something's happened. Is Jaff broken free? I don't think so. I'd probably feel it through the mark. But something's shifted. Let's hope that's good for Eve.
The mansion was low and beautiful. A song of blue Greco-Revival architecture with outbuildings just as graceful and flawless.
The family's done well for itself.
Good shielding wedded to the walls and property line. The kind of shielding laid for corporate clients. There would be regular security, too. Mage scan and deep scan shields. A whole battery of defenses, as well as guards roaming the grounds.
In other words, a great opportunity for me to let loose a little aggression.
I hid the slickboard under a juniper hedge, laying a small keep charm over it. Then, my jeans and shirt ripped and crusted from my healed wounds, I walked up the broad, well-maintained sidewalk as if I belonged in the neighborhood. The front gates were iron, stylized teeth writhing decoratively along the top curve. They reminded me of another set of gates on the east side. Gates with a Gothic RH worked into their metal. Standing slightly ajar and beckoning like every trap. I set my shoulders, gritted my teeth. The defenses started to quiver as soon as I got within half a block. I tasted the pulsing of the energies used to build them. Could see the layers of power thickening, hardening at my approach. By the time I stood in front of the gates, the defenses trembled on the edge of locking down. My sword was in my left hand, sheathed and ready. I would need it soon. In the old days, I would have found a way to subvert the defenses, broken in quietly and pursued what I wanted. Now I had a share of a demon's power, and no need or desire to act like this was corporate espionage.
Besides, I'm not here to steal. I'm here for something else entirely.
The house at the end of its black-paved drive was lit up like a Pushkin Yule tree. I looked at it, shimmering on its gentle hill, and the rage rose up inside me.
Whoever's in that house knows something about Gabe's murder, if they haven't committed it. Either way, they're gonna tell me what they know. All of it. Quickly.
This time I didn't push the red screaming fury down. I jabbed my right hand forward, pushing through the layers of defenses on the property line. They went crystal, locking down, but I was already in. The stiletto of my will driven like a physical knife between ribs. My right hand rings, amber and obsidian, sparked as I pumped power into them. The mark on my shoulder blazing with soft, spurred heat. I drew on it. Drew on the brand that was Jaframel's name, past caring that it was a demon's name I was relying on. The wrist cuff tightened and sent another ice burn of welcome strength jolting through my shoulder into my chest. I set my feet and pushed. I struck. My eyes were suddenly hot and blazing, as if lasers were popping out of them. Deadly force coiling, smashing loose, I wrenched the tough fabric of the defenses apart.
Where are the alarms, the guards? Is this the wrong house? One of the couriers described it to me, and a public info shell confirmed that the property was legally owned by one Asa Tanner, head of the Tanner family's legal corporate front.
I stepped through the rent in the shielding and pushed the gates. I drew on my sword, shoving the scabbard back in its loop on my belt, and taking out a plas gun.
Hi, honey. I'm home.
I couldn't feel them, the guards, hanging back out of sight, but I could imagine them just fine. Trap. It was a trap.
So what? Close the trap and see what happens when Danny Valentine gets really pissed.
I walked through the rain, hair plastered against skull and nape, dripping onto my ruined clothes. Steam curled up from my skin, ice melting before it could hit me. The sword sang in my hand, white flame twisting in its heart, blue runes spilling through the edges of the metal. My shields flared into the visible range, traceries of glittering light shimmering in a perfect globe around me. And Jaframel's aura of black diamond flames had closed over mine again, as if he was behind me, his hands clasped behind his back and his eyes burning no less than mine. I felt other minds here, and tasted the acrid tang of fear.
There's too much mage shielding for this to be a plain civilian's house. I'm in the right place, I know I am. So why aren't they attacking?
The hair stood up on the back of my neck. The cuff suddenly flamed the green of Jaframel's eyes. I swung around, sword lifting.
Sekhmet Sayis.
What I saw froze the curse on my lips and made my heart pound thinly in my temples, throat, and wrists. A low, sinuous shadow stalked through the rip I'd made in the defenses. A flash of crimson eyes, a glossy obsidian pelt, an ungainly, graceful shamble of a walk. I dropped the plas gun and closed both hands instinctively around my katana's hilt. The hellhound bulleted toward me. I threw my body to the side, both hands on the hilt and blade blurring down. It turned on itself as I landed.
Too quick, it's too quick, it's too quick!
I flung myself in the opposite direction. Gravel sprayed as it skidded. Black blood whipped up from my blade as I shuffled back, bringing the shining length up between us. Took the high guard. Right hand over left, holding the hilt almost at my right shoulder. The hellhound shook itself. My lips skinned away from my teeth, and fury scorched the inside of my throat. I leapt for it, on the attack. My shoulder smashed, torn apart with pain as my right side tore too. Blood sprayed and we fell as I rammed against the hilt of my blade, driving it through smoking demon flesh.
Get up!
The bright length of my sword buried in its chest, its claws flexing and tangling with my ribs. I sank on my back into a carpet of grass, blinking up at the endless blue depths of the sky. Sunlight touched my bare wrist with warm gold. I pushed myself up on my elbows. Each blade of grass was detailed, glowing juicy green. The field rolled, bounded only by a broken stone wall, with the purple shadows of mountains in the distance. An oak tree lifted proudly in full summer leaf. At any moment, I expected to see a troop of Old Christer Amish in their wide-brimmed hats on their way to one of their meetings, or a coven of witches carrying their baskets of food for the feast after the magic was done, or a group of evangelicals of Gilead, the women veiled and the men in suits and bow ties, hair parted in the center and held down with pomade under small, circular, embroidered skullcaps.
I like this better.
I could smell him again. Spiced shaman, pepper and honey, and the clean, healthy smell of male. A smell with no taint or tang of demon. Jace lounged next to me, braced on his elbows and so close, in jeans and a white cotton button-down shirt. The sun made his hair a furnace of gold, lit his eyes with incandescence. Grass pricked at my hands as I sat up and looked down at myself. Black t-shirt, jeans, bare feet, my toes human pale and painted wicked crimson with molecule drip polish.
You again. Jason.
One elegant golden eyebrow arched. He had a long blade of grass in his mouth, lazy, like a cigarette. I could see the smattering of freckles across his nose, ones that never showed unless he was in full sun. Even the golden tint to his shaved cheeks was there. And oh, my heart hurt to see him in such detail. Muscle moved under his shirt as he sat up straight, crossing his legs tailor fashion. His knee bumped me. The strand of grass dropped from his lip, vanished into the thick mat of greenery.
Absolutely, baby. Miss me?
What are you doing here?
I could do no more than whisper. The breath stolen from me by sunlight, the breeze against my skin, the prickle of sweat under my arms and at the small of my back. I smelled grass and the richness of air with no hover wash or biolab exhalation, no sour fullness of human decay. I even smelled the faint woodsy odor of the oak tree and the rich loam of drifted leaves scattered around it.
Other people get lower. You get me.
But you're dead.
My eyes prickled with tears.
Am I having my death dream at last? Where's the blue light and my God? Where's the Hall of Eternity and the Well of Souls?
Am I dead?
I tried not to sound pathetically hopeful. Failed miserably. Jace's face fell slightly, turned solemn. I saw the thin white traceries of cirrus clouds and the haze of distance over the faraway mountains.
Love's eternal, Danny. You mean you've been dealing with death all this time and you don't know that?
His mouth curled up in a half smile, a tender expression. A butterfly meandered past, its wings a blue reflecting the sky's wheeling vault.
You always were stubborn.
He leaned over, reaching out and bridging the gap between us. He stroked my cheek, his calloused fingertips gentle. Neither of us carried a weapon here, but his hands were still rough with practice. Then he pushed a strand of my hair back delicately, and I found myself leaning forward. Our mouths met. Kissing him had always been like a battle before, greedy and deliciously heated. A combustion. But here it was gentle. His mouth on mine like velvet. His hands cupping my face delicately. His thumb feathered over my cheekbone. He made the low humming sound he always used to after sex. He kissed the corner of my mouth, kissed my temple, closed me in his arms.
You're hurt. But you'll be all right.
I buried my face in the juncture between his neck and shoulder, smelled the human cleanness of him.
Gabe. Eddie.
He stroked my back, kissed my hair. It felt so real, so real.
Eternal, Danny. Remember? That means forever.
His arms tightened.
You have to go back now. It's time.
I don't want to. Please, I don't want to. Let me die. Let me stay here.
I felt him shake his head as the sunlight beat down on us in waves. The hot simmering of a summer day. A cauldron of a field under the bright vault of heaven.
I want to stay. I don't care where this is.
That's not the way it works, baby. Go on now. Be good. I'm watching out for you.
A shadow drifted over the sun, and just like that, I snapped back into full wakefulness, my hand blurring out and sinking into vulnerable human flesh. Leander stumbled back, his dark eyes wide, the emerald in his cheek flashing. My left cheek burned. I felt my tat shifting as his did, inked lines running under the skin. My emerald spat a single glowing green spark. Now I knew who he reminded me of. The knowledge hit me so hard, I scrambled back, casting around for my sword hilt. He held his hands up. He had a fading bruise on his cheekbone and moved a little stiffly.
Calm down. Calm down, Danny. God damn it.
I looked at the room. No window, one door. A bed with a purple cotton comforter and rumpled pale pink sheets. A stripped pine nightstand with a pitcher of water. Leander was unarmed, but he held my sword. Gingerly, as if he was afraid it might bite him. He offered it to me as I crouched on the bed.
What the hell are you doing here?
He shrugged, offered me my sword.
You're safe. I hooked back up with Lucas. There's some news you should hear.
Where am I?
My throat was on fire, sore and scraped raw. The full spectrum lights beat down, showed me my own hands, slim and golden and beautifully graceful.
In a safe place. Listen, Danny, I want your word, all right? I want you to listen to what we have to say. On your honor.
His wide, dark eyes met mine. I caught a faint green spark far back in his pupils. It vanished.
Did I really just see that?
The Hellhound. Did it?
You killed it. I repaired the shielding. I thought we were going to lose you, but you pulled through.
He was chalky pale under his dark hair, and his hands trembled just a little. He was afraid of me. That managed to smash the last vestiges of resemblance. Jace had never been afraid of me. It had never even mattered to Jace what body I wore. He loved me. I belonged to Jaffra Mel. No amount of trying to regain my lost humanity would overcome that one simple fact. No matter how angry or hurt he made me, Jaff was the only person who truly knew me, even if he didn't know very much about handling me. Even fighting him, being angry at him, struggling against him was better than relaxing with someone else. After all, who else did I reach for when I finally felt out of my depth, even though he'd held me up against a subway wall and bruised my arm, my heart? I hadn't thought of calling anyone else.
The demon and the fleshwife are literally one being. Whenever they're written about, it's in the singular, as if each pair is one person.
A scream rose up in me, died at the back of my throat, cascaded back down into an endless black hole of bitterness that beat like my pulse inside my chest. My left shoulder felt heavy and full. The wrist cuff was dry and powdery pale as it rested against my arm, its cold numbness temporarily gone. I still wore the blood-drenched rags of my clothes. I eased myself down from crouching on the bed and stood, swaying and finally making my knees lock. I snatched my sword from Leander and looked him in the eye. Nothing. Nothing but a great yawning distance between me and this human necromance I liked, whose company had made me feel a little better, but that was all.
I killed it.
I should have felt happy. I'd killed something even Jaffra Mel and McKinley had treated cautiously. My ribs ached on the right, twinging as I moved, the flesh tender as it had been after Lucifer's parting kick.
God damn, I feel like shit.
I clicked the blade free of the scabbard, examined it. Blue runes ran wetly in the steel, blazing out as soon as it left the darkness of confinement.
Still blessed. Still mine.
The sword kills nothing, Danyo-chan. It is will kills your enemy.
I killed a fucking hellhound. Gods above and below, I have killed a hellhound.
All right. I must have sounded a little more together, because Leander's shoulders eased and his hands dropped back to his sides. What is it you have to tell me?
Come with me. I'll take you to Lucas.
We walked down a short hall with a framed Berscardi print on one side and a priceless fluid lace-carved marble statue tucked in a niche. My nostrils widened, smelling a stasis cabinet and dried blood. Leander stepped into a circular room holding two leather couches and a fireplace with a real fire. When we reached the room, Lucas was there, dropped down on one of the couches with his arm flung over his eyes. Standing at the only other entrance to the room was a slim, tall man with a thatch of chestnut hair and bright blue eyes, his feral, clean-shaven face set in an ironclad smile. He wore a shirt that looked like fur until I looked closer and realized it was pelt. He wore only a pair of jeans tucked into very good boots, Italiano and handmade by the look of them. The glossy, hairy shirt was flagrant advertising of his status as a werecane, and a dominant one, too. He had less of the unprotected shiver around his mental walls than a more submissive cane's. My right hand closed around my sword hilt. I'd already almost been trapped once by a werecane.
Have Lucas and Leander betrayed me?
Put that goddamn thing down.
Lucas's arm unreeled away from his eyes. He glared at me, haggard and bloodshot.
He looks wearier than death after the 70 days war.
The flat color of his eyes was accentuated by red rims. He calculated everything about me in one piercing look, and the river of scarring down the left side of his face twitched. I dropped my right hand to my side, tilted my head slightly, acutely aware of Leander behind me.
Human, werecane, and whatever Lucas is.
What the motherfucking goddamn shit-sucking hell is going on? The werecane made a short, sharp movement. A muscle twitched in my right forearm.
You've been played like a fucking hollow board. What would you say if I told you we had Masadi in the next room?
I'd say I'd love to talk to him. Who the hell's the fur boy? I haven't had a good time with Kane lately.
You've been hanging out with the wrong type. You're Danny Valentine. I'm Asa Tanner, head of the Tanner family. Nice to meet you.
My sword leapt partially free of the sheath.
Fuck, damn it all, listen!
I'm listening. I said it calmly enough, ignoring the way my knuckles stood out, white against the hilt, and my entire body tensed.
I didn't kill Thornton nor Spokorelli.
Liar. Asa Tanner shrugged, a marvel of coordinated fluidity. What's a cane doing as head of a mob family?
You think humans are the only ones who should make a little profit? Just like a skin, you're all the same.
You didn't show up. Sloppy Valentine.
I was chased by four fucking police cruisers.
Danny, hold on. Hold everything.
So, what percentage of your family is human, Furboy?
Only about 30. Those that can keep up. We're a mongrel bunch.
But they're all human.
The shock troops I'd thought were mob were all human. Every stinking one. And carrying very expensive gear as well as being legally augmented. I'd assumed the Tanner family, as the dominant cartel around here, could afford that type of gear. But it hadn't made sense for them to be only legally augmented, especially when they were chasing a half-demon. They should have been spliced and loaded to within an inch of their motherfucking lives. It also made no sense for a mob family with a cane at its head to be cooperating with the police for anything. As dim a view as most scions take of the cops, a werecane's view is even dimmer. Back before the Parapsychic Act, some police forces had special, secret cadres to hunt Kane. That's why the werecane only work as freelancers when it comes to paranormal species bounties. They don't cooperate with hegemony police like Kobolding or Dracolt do. It's whispered that some police stations still have hunting cadres, secret fraternities fighting a war against the furred and fanged of the hegemony citizenry. Not to mention the feathered, winged, and clawed. I didn't know if it was true, but the rumor was enough.
So the shock troops weren't Tanner family goons. But they weren't police troops either, were they? No badges, no insignia. And there were no scions among them. If they were Saint City PD or hegemony marshals, they'd have had psionic support teams. God above, Danny, you nearly killed the wrong people.
I shoved that thought down. I would examine it properly later.
There's a lot I'm gonna have to figure out later. If I make it to later.
But for right now, maybe, just maybe, the Tanner family wasn't the enemy.
Fuck me.
I was too tired, too hungry, and too goddamn confused. My left arm hurt from the mark on my shoulder all the way down to the fingertips. I'm halfway convinced. I sheathed my sword.
You run chill.
I didn't feel conciliatory at all, but at least I didn't want to kill him.
Yet.
It's going to soak the streets anyway. I make sure the distributors don't cut it with anything.
How very generous of you. His chin lifted half a millimeter, defiant. He was tense, his weight balanced between both feet. If he came for me, I wondered if I could take him. There was a wearcane. Said he was working for the mob. His smile broadened.
It's a show of dominance exposing his teeth. He is one angry wearcane.
I wouldn't have sent a single cane to IU, Valentine. I'd have sent a full pack with a moontalker to bring you in. Not every fucking cane in the city answers to me. Though they should.
Okay. I tore my eyes away from him, looked at Lucas. A fine, thin sheen of sweat made his pale forehead glisten. Strands of his lank hair sticking to pasty skin. What the fuck is going on?
Question, Masadi. Then you can tell me what you think.
Hovan Tadeo Masadi sat in the room's single chair, staring out the window at the ripples of water on the bay. He was pale and jean-spliced to within an inch of his life.
No normal human could look that exquisitely buffed.
Every surface was almost poreless. His face remodeled, not along the lines of Holovid beauty, but with a strong, jawed, aquiline perfection seen only in classical marbles. He wore a rumpled gray linen suit, and his pale hair was sleek and shining, a little long for a corporate clone. Almond-shaped hazel eyes completed the picture. Cat's eyes in a statue's face. The eyes were an artist's choice, maybe. He didn't glance at the door as I stepped into the room. Instead, he sat, for all the world as if he was meditating. This room was painted white, too.
This mansion feels more like a stage set than a family nerve center. Asa Tanner looked like he'd be more at home in a tank bordello. Where does he really sleep? Probably in a heap of other furry dozing beasts. Pack animals.
I folded my arms, my clothing shifting and rustling. I was just glad it covered the decency bits.
If I keep this up, I'll end up dressed in nothing but bloody rags like a zombie in the old Father Egyptos holovid.
Masadi still said nothing. He probably wanted me to sweat a little. Pure corp clone strategy.
Well, he's practicing hardline corp psych crap on the wrong person.
My thumb caressed the katana's guard. I'd let out a little of the fury boiling under my breastbone, but there was plenty more.
I could easily... Oh, so easily slip my blade free of the sheath, press it against his throat, watch a bright line of blood well against pale human skin, hear a corporate monster begging for his life. It would feel good to kill him. It would be wonderful to smell his fear, even if he's only human.
I realized I was smiling. It made a thin rill of fiery power shoot through the air, touching each wall and tearing along every surface. My thumb pressed against the guard.
Such a small movement will click it free.
Masadi bolted to his feet, his almond-shaped eyes wide as he scrambled, overturning the chair. He stared at me, blinking furiously, and I now saw he had been crying. Tear tracks glittered on his plained cheeks. His mouth trembled but firmed as he faced me, drawing up his shoulders as if preparing for a fight. The fury leaked away, mostly. It settled back into a granite egg of coldness in my chest. I shoved my sword into the loop on my belt.
You're her, Valentine.
That's what they call me. You have... I checked my dat band. A little bit of theater to drive the point home. Exactly 2 standard minutes to convince me not to kill you. Start talking.
Eddie's dead. I suspect his wife's dead too, or you wouldn't be here. I know who killed him, and I can guess who killed her.
I folded my arms, sank my fingernails with their chipped black polish into my arms. Jaframel's mark was warm, pulsing power down my skin.
I'm waiting.
He winced, and I took another look at him.
Anubis at their Ka, he's a scion.
Not enough for schooling or accreditation, but he had a little shine to his aura, and the clear edges of his personal power field told me he meditated regularly. Whatever small psionic potential he had, he took good care of it.
That's why Eddie would work with you. You're a scion.
A little bit. 4.3 on the revised Matheson. Not even worth teaching.
I nodded.
Must be a real asset when dealing with us freakheads.
His cheeks flushed. A faint blush high on the arc of the bones, just like a girl.
Not really.
I guess not. Normals might not trust you if they knew, and we don't trust you either since you're not trained. You're not in either world, are you? Then again, neither am I.
That chilling thought made the last few flickering vestiges of killing rage die back. They left a black, aching hole in my chest. I leaned against the door and met his eyes, the tattoo on my cheek burning.
Dante Valentine. Named for a saint whose day became a celebration of fertility and romantic love. Born in a hegemony hospital, father unknown, mother's name erased under the Fall Rile Privacy Act. Rated 38 on the revised Matheson scale. Attended primary schooling at Rigor Hall, attended the Amadeus Academy, graduated with honors, and went straight into apparitions. Made your reputation while still in school by raising St. Crowley, the Magi from Dust. Also made another type of reputation when you entered the mercenary field under the direction of a mob shaman turned freelancer.
Stop it.
If he says Jace's name, I'm gonna draw my sword.
Not because I was angry, but because I didn't think I could stand to hear this polished little god of a man use his mouth on Jason Monroe's name. He stared at me. We were even, I suppose. Maybe he wanted to kill me, too. His almond-shaped eyes narrowing and burning with something too complex to be hatred, and too frightened to be loathing.
I've done my research. Eddie mentioned your name when things started to get too deep. Then I found myself with a mystery in front of me, a dead fucking skinlin, and my name on a hit list.
I folded my arms again, dug my fingernails in.
Eddie found a cure for chill, and the shock troops chasing me with the cops were corporate crack squatters.
My hands squeezed. Warm blood trickled down my arms, dripped off my elbows.
Pico Fi's troops.
No, probably Herborn Corps. They work with alkaloids. They're one of our biggest competitors in the pain blocker field. We were infiltrated. I believe it was routine corporate espionage, but one of the agents happened to find out. But there's something else. The Pico Lab security was taken out by a focused EMP pulse.
So was Gabe!
It was Saint City Police Department tech!
I slumped back against the door. I don't think I've ever been reduced to speechlessness from rage so quickly before.
Say what?
I replayed mental footage. Decided that he had said what I thought I'd heard.
Saint City Police Department tech. What the fucking hell?
Nasadi knew he had my attention now.
There is a fuck of a lot of chill money that goes to the cops, Miss Valentine. Not just from routine payoffs, but in other ways. Herborn found out what we had and leveraged every contact it had inside the police force, I guess. They're scrambling to keep this quiet. You're creating a lot of trouble for them, and they need to shut you up, just like they needed to shut Eddie's wife up. You made it goddamn hard for them, yapping at the heels of the IA division about where the Skinlin was getting all the trouble from. It wasn't the first time they tried to kill him.
Not the first time. Oh, Gabe. Eddie. Gods forgive me.
How many? How many times?
6 or 7. He said it was no big deal. And I came home to find my house tossed.
All fun and games until you get your own fucking hands dirty, right? 6 or 7 times and Gabe didn't call me?
Then the knowledge hit home.
She hadn't thought I would show up. She'd known Jaframel was alive. Had she thought I wasn't interested in my human friends anymore? I would have dropped everything and come running for her marriage, for the birth of their daughter, for the first attempt on Eddie's life. Hadn't she known that? Had she held off contacting me because she wasn't sure? How could she have doubted me? Was I her last hope because she wasn't sure I'd respond? How could she have doubted even for a moment? Dear gods, I lied to her about Jaframel. She probably felt betrayed.
Guilt crawled into my stomach. I tasted bile.
That same night, Eddie's wife was attacked. She had the kid with her. It was them getting attacked that did it, Valentine.
Eddie told me they were safe,
but— Did Eddie tell you where? Tension spilled down my back, brought me back to myself. Where he'd put the kid?
He said you'd know she was safe. You mean, you didn't know?
If there is one phrase I'm beginning to hate, that is it. This time, however, I just want to be sure this greasy, gene-spliced son of a bitch doesn't know where Gabe's daughter is.
Who? Who is it?
Who betrayed them?
He folded his arms in a copy of my pose. He was sweating, his crumpled suit beginning to wilt.
Are you going to kill me, Valentine? Where's the cure?
In a safe place.
3 vials held by a demon in Hawk and the recipe in the murder file with Jado.
A very nasty thought hit me.
I gave 1 vial to Horman. I was so sure he could be trusted. But right after that, 4 police cruisers descended on me. And 1 vial was gone, maybe stolen by whoever Gabe had trusted. Whoever had gone in her house and searched it as she lay bleeding and dying in her own backyard, stunned with a focused EMP pulse, maybe triggered by a member of her own police force. Oh, segment, Sias. I'm even suspecting Horman. He wouldn't be mixed up in this. He doesn't play like that.
But the suspicion had taken root and bloomed in my chest with a feeling uncomfortably close to panic. I was well on my way to being paranoid. Blood dripped off my elbows. I felt the blades of my claws slide out of my flesh. My eyes dropped to Masati's chest. Who? I tasted the copper fruit spice of demon blood.
I am not in the mood to fuck around. Don't push me. For the love of every god that ever was, don't push me, you fucking little pile of corporate shit.
I said who? He said the name. I found myself halfway across the room, his shoulders pressed against bare white-painted wall, my right hand raised, claws springing free.
It's true, I swear it. I swear on my mother's grave, it's true.
I believed him. As fantastic as it was, I believed him.
It makes sense now.
Everything about the puzzle clicked into place. Everything except who in the Saint City PD had murdered Gabe.
I'll find that out soon enough.
You're a loose end, too. So you came running to find me.
I knew Asa. It's... he... Pico. We sell chill through him.
The rich, gassy scent of his fear filled the room. Went to my head like wine. In that single moment, I understood far more about demons than I ever wanted to.
It would be so fucking easy to kill him. Nobody would blame me. This fear is good. It's power. I can gorge myself on it.
The cuff chilled against my wrist. Numbness spread up my left arm, but the heat pulsing from Jaframel's mark drove it back.
You and your damn sense of honor.
Had she been surprised that I still kept some shards and slices of that honor? Would she be proud of how I was refraining from killing that polished, gene-spliced leech?
Of course the farm company sold Jill. It's high profit, easy for a fully equipped lab to make, and they can test other acid-based addictives and narcotics with it. So the farm companies are in bed with the mob, and the cops are in bed with the farm companies. Everyone gets along well and makes a tidy bundle. Until a Skinlan doing routine research comes up with a cure and everyone starts scrambling to own it and shut him up. Not necessarily in that order.
Sekhmet Sias. Jaframel's mark grew steadily warmer. A laser cutter spot of heat against my skin. I caught a glimmer of green. The cuff reacting. Why?
I don't care right now, Danny. I need whatever this corp clone can tell me.
Who's her contact on the police force, Masati? You give me that and you can walk away. I won't kill you.
My career's ruined anyway.
Sweat rolled off his perfect skin.
How much gene splicing did Pico pay for to make sure it had this beautiful face to present to the world? A pretty face on top and a mountain of bodies of dead chill junkies on the bottom. And all the other victims, too.
Like Lewis, the closest thing to a father I'd had, choking on his own blood because a junkie needed a fix. Isn't that a fucking shame?
Who? Some fucker named Pondside. Her stepbrother.
I nodded. Everything came together in a tidy little package.
Her. The traitor.
I dropped Masati, turned on my heel, and stalked for the door. The aroma of fear and shed demon blood turned the air velvet soft. A red-painted scent like the inside of a sex witch house. The thought hit me with almost physical force, I almost staggered with a sudden panicked burst of fear. But nobody knew where Gabe's daughter was. Nobody but me, and maybe the Prime's consort.
If anything happens to that kid, not even a Nichtren will be able to stop me from killing anyone who might have had a hand in this. Not even Jeff or Mel.
That was why, even though I loved him, I could not let him hurt Eve. The fierce feeling under my breastbone was instinctive. Even though I'd never even contemplated having children, I still could not let either Doreen's daughter or Gabe's be harmed if I could help it.
Mine. Both of them are mine now.
I halted near the door. If I see you again, I'll kill you.
He should be glad he's still alive. If he'd been less frightened of being found out as a Scion, maybe Eddie would still be alive. Or if he'd just been a little more decent as a human being, he might have warned Eddie they'd been infiltrated instead of just trying to save his own miserable skin. Why hadn't Gabe called me when the trouble started?
I knew why. She probably felt guilty, since she'd asked me to take the Lord's case and I'd ended up mind-raped and unable to think about the hall without shuddering like a chill junkie. Jace had died. My own grief must have tortured her. She'd probably felt accountable since she'd called me in. When I disappeared without saying anything about Jaffra Mel, she probably thought I couldn't stand to see her again. All the things we couldn't say to each other on the phone, convincing her that somehow she was culpable. That she was to be blamed, or that I blamed her in some way for the whole rotten, ugly fiasco. As honorable as I tried to be, Gabe was, intrinsically. How it must have hurt her to think she'd been responsible for my pain.
Oh, Gabe. Gabrielle. I should have told you. I should have known.
I'd have taken the Lord's case anyway. Some circles had to be closed. Some debts had to be paid, willing or not. I had been chosen to close the murderous circle of Rigor Hall. Whether by the gods or the ghosts of murdered and mind-battered children or by fate itself, it had been my duty. More than that, though, I would have done it because she'd needed me. She was my friend, my family, my kin, though we shared no blood. It had never occurred to me before that she could blame herself, that there was anything to blame her for.
Oh, Gabrielle, I'm so sorry.
I paced down the hall and stopped. Spice and heat filled my nose. The cuff squeezed, running with cold green light.
Not another hellhound, please, please, Anubis, not another hellhound.
Something didn't smell right. There was no sound, except the thunder. I took the last step around the bend in the hallway and saw the room was empty. No Lucas, no Leander, and no Asa Tanner. The drapes moved near the window, wet wind pouring in through the broken pane.
I didn't hear glass shattering.
The reek of demon was thick and overwhelming.
Son of a bitch! Messing with?
What the hell? My hand closed around the sword hilt, but suddenly a skinny red-skinned demon slapped my blade aside and backhanded me. His eyes glowed yellow, cat-slit, and darker lines of red like tribal tattoos writhed over his skin. Then he was on me, knee in my back, and something that burned clapped around my wrists. Noxious cloth pressed against my face, and darkness took me struggling down into a whirlpool. The last thing I saw was green glow painting the walls as the wrist cuff flared with icy, vicious light before guttering out.